Hey everyone, welcome to Recovery Rocks. This episode is sponsored by the folks at Sour Humanoid Vinegar.
And Sour
when I say the folks, I mean my partner who just started this amazing vinegar brand. Sour Humanoid is designed for cooking, created by a New York City sommelier who got sober after working at Michelin-starred restaurants and curating award-winning wine lists. This vinegar is an excellent way to make any meal special with very little effort. Check out some of the easy recipes at sourhumanoid.com. And we've had Nick on an episode before. He's, you know, a fellow sober entrepreneur, and we're excited to have Sour Humanoid sponsor this episode.
It's an amazing story, and I will give a brief testimonial just because I don't cook, but I have sent Sour Humanoid gift packs as gifts over the holidays to a couple of my friends who are big cooks, and it got rave reviews. So user tested, customer tested, and all thumbs up.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Recovery Rocks. It's your girl, Tawny, joined by my fabulous bestie co-host, Ms.
I go by Ms., even though I'm
Ms.
a Mrs.
Okay. I feel like I should have known that after 5 years of podcasting with you. I've never given you the prefix. Ah!
Man, nobody calls me Mrs. Friedman.
I ate at a restaurant called Friedman's recently.
Yes, there is one in Chelsea Market.
Yes, I went to the one in like Hell's Kitchen-ish.
Yeah.
But that's not your restaurant.
It is not.
Okay.
It is not, in fact.
Okay, so we have another recovery bestie with us today. Ms. Katie Mack.
Yeah, she's not married. She's very single. That's how we're starting this episode.
So if you are hot and interesting, actually interesting and hot, maybe just interesting, and you want to hit on Mac, just slide into her DMs.
I think hot's also a good requirement.
Okay, hot, yeah. Interesting, yeah. And hot. Okay, yeah. Cool.
Hot.
Thank you.
And hot is a subjective thing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Hot is in the eye of the beholder.
Your personality can be hot.
Yes, can make you hot.
And in my list of requirements, it has to be. So going back to it, hot. You just actually, the only requirement is that you have to be hot. But then
you
like
can
it
be
has
boring.
All these little,
you just have to be hot.
But like boringly hot.
Boringly hot. Okay, great.
That's
I'm
like
learning
emo.
So much about
your
both
emo.
Of you guys today. So if you listen to Panic at the Disco, please slide into Max DMs.
Mackers NYC.
Okay, but on a serious note, let's talk about grief.
Oh my God, what a transition.
Okay, so Mac has been on the show, what, this is your third time?
That's too many. It's been too many times.
One of my besties, sister in recovery, we go way back, but we really don't.
My life didn't start before I met you, so it's fine.
Yeah. But what I love about you and your work so much, is that you have such an interesting way to bring just the zeitgeist and modern life into your storytelling. And it's you are welcome. And, as a woman in recovery, there is always this mental health angle in your creative work, which I think is super interesting. So like in my work, you're quoted in my book in the breakup chapter. You are my go-to for sober breakup information, resources, if you will. And now, you know, last time you were on, we were talking about breakup content and sober breakups. Now we're talking about your new show, #UglyCry, where it's off Broadway. You just did a run in Pittsburgh that we want to hear all about. But can you tell our listeners about your new show, Ugly Cry, that's like happening right now off Broadway?
Thank you so much for that kind of amazing intro, for highlighting that I'm single and grieving and hot. And really, to get the opportunity to talk about hashtag Ugly Cry is really special for me. So hashtag Ugly Cry is a one person show. The person is me. It basically deals with the intersection between grief and social media and kind of what that looks like in this live immersive theatrical space is that we ask audience members to bring their phones into the theater space and engage with their phones while I also engage with my phone during this production. So we're sort of tackling a handful of things here. One being like the sort of first thesis statement that grieving in 2023 is different than grieving in 2010. And I make that argument because of this thing that we all are on, which is social media. And we have something that, called a digital footprint or digital content, and it continues to live on with or without us. And so this story is the true story of what I did when Eric was murdered, May 2021. I got a text message from him at about noon and he was dead by around 1:30. And this really spun me into sort of like grasping at straws and how to deal with his sort of whirlwind of grief.
Can you tell our listeners who Eric is just real quick?
Oh,
just the
yes.
relationship.
I'm staring at the cutest photo of him right now. Also while looking at you, your beautiful faces. It's great. It's like this whole sort of perfect ugly cry moment. So Eric Anthematin would have been 45 this year. If that name sounds familiar to any New York listeners, it's because he's kind of a little New York famous. Eric's a really special human being. I probably most notably in terms of the academic community was a philosopher and ethics professor and was teaching at New School at the time. He also spent a lot of times, a lot of energy and time in prisons teaching ethics in the prison system. So going in and sort of creating these courses. And then he would write these academic articles, sort of like creating the opportunity for us to sort of match these worlds and that people who are in the prison industrial complex are people too and sort of deserve humanity. And that's sort of his big platform. And Eric sort of strung that through a lot of things, which he was a martial arts teacher to children of all ages and adults. He was incredibly good at like Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and I would like go to some of his matches back in the day. He was a pretty prolific musician. I remember like right before he died, I got a really terrible video of him playing violin, but he was always taking on new instruments. So he could play the banjo, the guitar, the piano, and he would have he would help host these open mic nights for years and years and years. And a lot of people in the kind of Broadway and music community, he did the sound for them or played music for them. And he did these crazy performance arts pieces. And he also has a background in poetry. So all these things make this pretty incredible person who has a lot of friends. And I think it just made him so uniquely special to sort of always go through this lens of how to love people and what is humanity and what are we really searching for and what is a search for meaning in life. And he would have these really like beautiful conversations around that and also was able to look at death kind of squarely in the face and having these really difficult conversations. So he was just this pretty incredible person and somebody who I dated for kind of off and on for about 4 or 5 years and was the first person that I dated and slept with when I moved to New York City. So I had moved here. I'd been here like 6 days and I fell through his table because we were drinking heavily. I split open my hand. I severed the nerve to my wedding ring finger and decided that we were definitely going to be
It was
forever.
A sign. It was definitely
yeah, I was
a
like,
sign.
any drinkers who are listening to this, like know the story. And I think one of the reasons why I fell in love with him was because I'd done this sort of like catastrophic thing. This like really embarrassing, like falling through his antique glass table, glasses everywhere, like cut my mouth, like my lip, you know, I'm bleeding everywhere. I severed this thing, you know, was like kind of pretty hurt. And he was so kind to me. And I was so used to fucking up and kind of walking out of that space with like my tail between my legs, like, oh, I didn't mean for that to happen. I didn't mean for that to happen. And I was so taken with his kindness. And even this, again, it's just so funny to think about kind of my mental state then. And also I want to share this story too. But he walked me to the train in the morning and that gesture was like the nicest thing that anyone had ever done for me, which is kind of silly, but also like really, maybe also New Yorkers, like, y'all, you have to like get out of your bed. You have to like walk downstairs. You walk to the train station. That was like really, really nice. But it is funny because Eric, there's a handful of his friends who I had not met. I'd only known in lore. And Eric used to talk to his friends about me. And I was known as the alcoholic that he was in love with. So, there are poems in his notes app on his phone about me and my drinking, how much he wished I didn't drink. And Eric is the first person that I went to AA for. And that's a very specific sentence on purpose. I went to AA for him. And then our sort of our history is we broke up. We said some horrible things to each other. We did not speak for 4 years. And then kind of strangely, we had always been charting each other on the internet. You can sort of see when someone unblocks you or you're like, you think about them and whatever. And we, after a big breakup, and we made hashtag breakup content together, Eric and I rekindled in terms of our friendship and our collaboration. And then 2 weeks later, he was murdered. So that's all of it. That's the interpersonal. That's the beginning of the play. And oh, I guess to sort of wrap up what a hashtag All We Cry is it's an exploration around how I dealt with Eric's digital content to continue to stay close to him after he died. And sort of like it's like a little obsessive. It's a little crazy, but I felt really, really, really close to him. And some of it is a story about what one might do to either like lean into grieving or pull away from grieving. And how I think that somebody in this day and age could, anybody who has access to digital content could. And also probably the bigger thing is it's an excuse for me to still do that. It would be crazy if 2 years later I'm still hanging out with Eric and watching his digital content and spending a lot of time with him. It's a lot less crazy if you make it into an off-Broadway one-woman show and invite a bunch of people to come do it with you. That's just art. So I think it's a really interesting intersection. And I'm already counting down the days until it's over because I won't get to hang out with Eric on stage anymore.
I mean,
it's a lot.
You'll take it to other cities.
I mean, yeah, we're like this right now. So yeah, that's my fingers crossed. Sorry. we're not quite sure what the future of this whole thing is yet. We just got to get through it. But really it's to have a conversation about grief and grieving and sort of the space around internet, like, which is kind of niche. It's to practice and see what happens when we bring phones into the theaters. What would happen if we tried to upgrade this sort of dying live event space? And then three, it's so more people can hear about Eric.
And it's, I mean, even just hearing your history with Eric, he's living on, like, as corny as that is, it's, you know, like, in have you guys seen Coco?
Yeah, of course.
Yes.
So it's like, you know, when people fade, when they're not talked about anymore, and that just every time I watch that movie, it just, I cry so much. But just hearing you talk about his legacy and turning his legacy into art is just so fucking cool. And who knows who it's going to touch. I mean, you can tell us about how it went in Pittsburgh too, but you've gotten feedback from audience members already of how this show has helped their grieving process, has helped them, you know, parents making peace with, I remember I was at your, like, a table read, and this woman was there, is like helping her make peace with the fact that her child might die before her someday. And like, you're really making people feel things that they didn't know they were capable of feeling with this show.
Well, I don't think you're wrong, which is a strange thing to say, right? Because I think oftentimes, like, when you make something, we all try to like humble ourselves, but it really is the piece itself expresses, like, it pushes on some pain points for other people that I just didn't expect. You don't, like, as a maker of things that, you know, we don't know who it's going to touch and why it's going to touch people and in what and how and who they are in that moment when they meet that work. So it's just really interesting, right? Like, we can't control that. And this thing with Coco is, which I love, again, it's sort of like when the last person speaks your name, you sort of like disappear. And my argument is with the internet, like, the last time you can't Google somebody anymore, right? It stops. It's, you can't, like, the algorithm doesn't take you to them anymore, right? Where do you go? And I talk about this a little bit. A very good friend of mine was murdered sophomore year of high school in an interaction with a cop. And I remember he had like a MySpace account, and I his obituary was online. And I, during the course of this, I went to go look for him. And I, no matter how hard I Googled him, no matter how many pages I went through, I couldn't find his name, Zachary Miller. And it really, really, really affected me. And also during this time, Eric's TikTok got removed. Mm. And I don't know why.
Interesting.
And it's one of those things where like more pieces of him being gone. Yeah. And so it's just like less people can find him. So there's just something interesting about like it's Coco on the internet, you know, like if you can't Google him anymore, does he still exist? And of course we could still say his name, but there's that. And it this show, we had pretty small audiences in Pittsburgh, which was actually really, really, really special. But I will say that the number of DMs I got after the show and just sort of the unabashed sharing was profound. And it's sort of like I had no idea where these conversations were going to go with people. They just sort of like, I invited people to engage with me. I was like, I'm online, like, you know, slide into my DMs, you know, DMs are my love language. And people would just write paragraphs, right? And then they didn't even really need me to respond. I mean, of course I did, but like they just needed a space to talk about this thing that they had been meditating on. And I think a lot of the grief shows that I've seen over the past year or so, the argument is like, man, we should talk about grief more. And I sort of take that and I agree. And I think I try to ask the question, but how do we do it? And the answer is sort of like, we try. It's like really simple.
We just talk about it. I mean, you talk about it. Like if someone's like, hey, how are you? Like, I'm not doing great. I really miss this person today. You know, I'm having a hard time. It could be as simple as that. It's just, there's this expectation that we have to grieve in private. And you absolutely can, you know, I'm not saying everyone needs to grieve publicly, but if you could even just talk about how you're having a hard time, that can really help normalize this feeling.
I so believe in the act of the witness. For me, again, it's not necessarily about being public, because I think public has a lot of like negative connotations with it. But for example, like, I think keeping secrets, I think especially in this recovery space, keeping secrets keep you sick, right? Mm-hmm. So any time that I feel like I have to hold back something, I am probably one step closer to a drink or a drug for me personally. And that doesn't mean I need to vomit myself over people at all times. But I think, right, that when something's really, really important to us and we do everything we can to try to pretend that something's not, I think we distance people. I think people can pick up on that. And I think we end up feeling a little like disillusioned from what reality is. So in these spaces, I think like I mean, with you, Tawny, I'm like, I literally have said that. I just miss Eric a lot right now.
Yeah.
And you just practice either saying like, that would be really hard, or do you want to tell me about him? Or, you know, like I've shared pictures of him with you and you're like, oh, he's so hot, you know, like, and I love that, right? Like this idea that, yeah, I know the person's dead, but like, I still want to talk about them. So I think in the traditional spaces, and I think we're getting better and better and better, but I think it sort of intersections a little bit with like sobriety and recovery. Like I totally respect people's anonymity because that helps them. But what is the space in which you're able to be public with who you really are? And to me and my recovery, it actually didn't start to kick in just for me until I really started to feel like I could be myself and not pretend it was just because I was like on medication that I couldn't drink or something, you know, like kind of those great excuses that you use in the beginning. Oh, you know, I have a yeast infection. So I'd rather say I have a yeast infection than I'm sober, right? Oh, I can't drink, you know? And now it's like, oh yeah, no man, I don't want to fucking drink. Who drinks anymore? know.
Yeah, I'm an addict in recovery, but yeah. Please have let me pour you a margarita.
Right. Oh, you need me to hold your drink? Yeah, that's no problem.
I don't care if you drink wine. I really don't.
I really don't.
Okay, so you and I are doing an event.
Yeah, which is so exciting. So on November 12th.
Yes, let's discuss.
Tell them who's going to be there.
So in my own grief journey, Lisa and I did an episode on this earlier in the year. I lost several friends due to drug poisoning, which is the new term for overdose. The term overdose is being phased out.
It was like once a week for a while there.
So I lost, it was like four or five friends. They were former drinking buddies. They were high school friends, just people that I grew up with, you know, passed in a very short period of time. And as a millennial, of course, what I did was I obviously let myself cry and I talked to my therapist, but I also looked up hashtag grief on Instagram. And then I connected with now a dear friend, Gina Maffa. Mm. She's a grief therapist. And we connected earlier in the year. And we realized we both have books coming out around the same time. So we really got close over a short period of time. I was reading her posts talking about grief. You know, she's a grief therapist, so she is definitely someone to check out. Check out her book, Moving On Doesn't Mean Letting Go. I had this idea. I was like, well, these two people that I'm obsessed with both have grief stuff going on. They've both turned grief into art. How can we all get together? So I reached out to Mac and I reached out to Gina and I was like, is there something here? We started a group chat and now we all fell in love and we're going to do a live talk back after one of Mac's shows on Sunday, November 12th. I will be moderating a conversation after the show. Me, Mac, and Gina are going to sit down and talk about grief, turning pain into art, mental health, grieving in the modern age. We're going to talk about all of this. So we're going to have the links to that event in the show notes. And you can also DM me or Mac if you have any questions. Mac, what am I missing out? What am I leaving out?
No, I think nothing. I think that's exactly it. We're going to have Big Vision's going to be there, which is exciting.
That's right. Big Vision. Eve, the founder of Big Vision, has been on the show before. I've done a lot of work with Big Vision over the years. It's going to be a good night. And Matt, can you let them know just the dates that the show is running? If they can't make November 12th, let them know how long the show's going on.
Yeah, we have 19 performances. So it's a 4-week run. Started October 26th, goes through November 18th. You can go to uglycryplay.com and find those dates. And special for our listeners here, if you put in MAC23 into the code when you check out, you will be able to receive $10 tickets. So tickets are originally $25 because y'all are listening to my sexy, sexy, tired voice. you can come and watch me get more tired while watching the show for only $10. And I will mention that some of the things about the show is that, you know, I'm on the treadmill for 90% of it. So I just really, that's just should be noted.
Yeah, if you're listening and you're like, yeah, this sounds interesting, but like I'm not into theater, this is your show. if you're listening and you love theater, this is obviously a recommended show. But if you are not into theater at all, this might be your gateway into the weird world of performance art and live theater.
I think right as New Yorkers, we're like always looking for like the weirdest, cool new thing. But sometimes you're like, oh man, that was a little too weird. Like I didn't need to see that. I'm thinking one thing, for example. But I think this is a good like weird, strange show. It's new, but it has a linear-ish storyline, right? Like it's a little non-traditional, just meaning that there's like come in with the idea that I will need you. It is a
lot non-traditional.
It's a lot non-traditional. Yeah, I guess. It's a lot
non-traditional. Well, I mean, you're on your phone. Like, you're,
yeah, that's
the
true.
Audience
that's
is on your, you're on your phone the majority of the time. You're interacting with the, it's a one woman show. You're interacting with this one woman while you're in the show, like while you're at the show. And if you don't want to participate, that's fine.
It's but true.
It's very much encouraged. And you're running on a treadmill while talking about grief and talking to a lost love. You know, like a lost dear friend. So this is a lost dear friend
and
experience.
An ex-lover is also in the show. Yeah, we like to cover all of our grief bases here. I mean, yeah, just to highlight a few strange things that happened in the show. I'm on the treadmill the whole time. I make a porn with my ex, with Eric. I make an AI porn with Eric. I have a colonoscopy. I get waxed on stage. These are just some things that I really want to let you know that happen. And you're like, how does that all intersect with grief? Like, no, there's only one way to find out. Get your tickets now.
Is there a splash zone warning, or is this like?
Actually, I should tell you there will be, I think. We're not 100% sure yet. Yeah. There will be a little bit of a splash zone. Probably just my sweat. I got to be honest. That'll be the splash zone. If you're in the first couple rows, maybe bring a poncho.
I'll wear my raincoat. Before we ask about music, I'm curious. No, wait. That was it. That's what I was gonna say. No, let's go to music. So maybe
I don't want to ask
you
more.
I've been talking this whole time, Lisa. Before we go into music, is there anything you have for Matt?
It's so fascinating to me. I mean, everything Mac does is just spectacular and serious, groundbreaking, right? The idea of this show would have never occurred to me in a million years. Yet when Mac creates it, it comes out, it's like, oh yeah, we need that, right? Mm. We need that. This has changed. I lost one of my best friends, in 2006, I was sober at the time, but there was not social media. And I think of, you know, I have old pictures of us, but it's not, you know, it's not, there's nothing in his words. There's nothing in his voice, except what I have in my head. And I think it's a really, it would be the kind of thing that, I would have loved to be able to have that captured. At the same time, when I think of myself grieving, I lost my mother last year, and I put one post up of us with one picture. And
I remember.
I didn't even check the comments because it was too much, but I just felt like I needed to place that marker, because so much of what Tawny and I do is public and we don't hold things back. And we talked about her as she was, you know, going, you know, getting more and more sick. And there's something about it that I realize now in listening to you two talk about this, that I'm so happy. I'm going to get like weepy now. I'm so happy that I have this, all these recordings, all these podcast episodes of Tawny and I talking about my mom and talking about what was going on. And I'm gonna stop talking because I'm crying, but it's really, it's fascinating to me to see the shift. And Mac, you are just like pulling this to the surface. There are so many people who are out there. I know when I heard about it and everything, I was like, wow, that is so necessary. And so thank you.
You hit on so many things that, again, kind of spun this. I remember the post that you made of your mother. I remember reading it because I remember waiting for it. And then I had gotten the news from Tawny that your mother had passed. It was interesting. I when it came up, I don't know, if, like not anticipation of, but I remember like being kind of like residually worried about you or just thinking about you, and then seeing your post and having that be, this is so strange. Like, this is a strange conversation to say out loud, and having me know that you're okay if that makes any sense. Right. I think I commented something like thinking of you, love you or something, you know, like, and this is actually the impetus for some of this, this idea that like, if you go to like Vanity Fair and somebody famous dies, you will see all of the way that they direct how people responded to people's death, people's Instagram eulogy posts. So Vanity Fair, yeah. Like when somebody dies, it'll be like, oh, such and such said this about this person, such and such tweeted this and such and such. And like, that is the way in which we have it. Mm-hmm. And I always talk to Tani about time capsules, and Instagram is supposed to be, right? These little time capsules, this little scrapbook of where we are at this moment in time. And the practice of trying to express our grief and sadness, I think, is a really, really cool grief tool that Instagram actually allows us to have. Mm-hmm. Like, again, like, I don't know any other internet space, or like, you know, tweeting also, but like, yeah, like something that was before then. Like, if I wanted to comment on somebody's death, I would have to go to the eulogy, or sorry, I have to go to the funeral and give a eulogy. And that actually might be too much, and it might be too soon. I don't think I wrote Eric's eulogy like a month and a half after he died. Like, I couldn't find the words. And if you can remember, like, thinking about what are the words you're going to use for your mother and stuff like that. Anyway, I just, all that stuff is, it's spun out of the things that you're noticing. I really appreciate what you said about, I will say that I have been looking for other people to do it, hoping that they were already doing it, and they weren't. And so I had to make
it. Yeah. That's a thing.
Both y'all understand that.
We understand. Yeah.
It's groundbreaking.
It really is. And like the internet angle is like, there's so much shit talking about the internet. And it's like, yes, of course. Like, yeah, we can all talk shit about the internet. There's a lot 100%. Of really bad stuff going on. But what I love about this conversation and your show and your work is that it just brings nuance to the conversation. Like, sure, maybe like screens are rotting our brains, but like, we're also, I was able to attend some of these funerals through Zoom that I would not have been able to attend before. So it's like, I mean, it really is showing, I think this conversation is showing that like the internet, social media, like it's largely value neutral. It's not good or bad. It's just this thing that we have. And this show is a good reminder of how to use the internet as a tool, as like for your benefit, instead of, because like, yes, tech addiction, social media, like body dysmorphia, like all this stuff is real, but it really is a tool. The internet really is a tool that can help us connect. It's allowing this conversation to happen right now. Right. So, I mean, it's like, I guess just like, this is my love letter to the internet.
Yes. You'll hear this in the show, but I say it probably 5 times. I fucking love the internet. I just fucking love it.
And I mean, so this, I remember when you were writing this show, we were talking about how it is like, it's comparative analysis is Joan Didion meets Bo Burnham.
That's right. So, that's right.
I love that.
Joan Didion's Year of Magical Thinking meets, which is all about like how she sort of made this agreement with the universe after her husband and daughter both passed away. It's sort of like the secret that she had, plus Bo Burnham.
Bo Burnham's inside, which
inside.
Regular basis.
Yeah.
Right, right. Which I really think is probably the best comp that I've ever come up with for anything, because it really feels like I stole from both of them, which I do for everything.
Were there before... Before we wrap up, Mac, are there any, other than Bo Burnham's Inside, are there any songs that maybe got you through grief or maybe helped you? Do you listen to anything while you're writing?
So I actually will pose this to everybody here. Before anybody comes into the audience, one of the non-traditional things that we do, and I've been doing this in all different spaces, is that we ask people to give us their funeral song. Meaning, what is a song that they would like to have played at their own funeral? And we put it on a Spotify playlist. So, and we make it accumulative. And then everybody who comes to the show has access to that playlist, and you can see what other people put on. And a friend of mine made a playlist for me to get through. And the song that I am obsessed with, I play it on repeat, is Lizzie Airplane's Doomsday. And now if anybody knows like sort of like show rituals, me and my stage manager, Sarah Shea, and Claudia Zijic We have an entire pre-show ritual. And one of them is that I have to play Doomsday before the show. And it is my rock star song. But that is right now my funeral song and my funeral playlist. I don't know. Can I turn it over to both of you? Can I change the format and say, what would be your funeral playlist song?
My first thought, I've a friend of mine years and years and years ago named Asa. He always said that his funeral song would be Today by the Smashing Pumpkins. And he said he wanted to be like dropped from the ceiling. And he had this like, so we have this visual. And so now anytime funeral song comes up, I think of Today by the Smashing Pumpkins. And I think that that's just like an interesting, ironic choice.
It is a good one.
But I think I would really need to think on that. What about you, Lisa?
No question. Give me Shelter. It's the only song I ever want to hear when shit goes down. It's the ringtone on my phone. It is like, I feel most in my essence listening to Give Me Shelter. And I would want to be like in my essence at my funeral.
My favorite thing is that people either really know or they're just like, they're kind of in this like really pensive middle space. And I was sort of like passing out flyers and getting to know people when I was in Pittsburgh. And I would ask couples and it was like something that a couple, regardless of how long they'd have been together, they didn't know that about the other person. So that was just really, really interesting. And also like felt important. Like it didn't feel like trite. It was like one of those things where you're like, your partner might want to know this because we are all going to die.
Yeah.
And at Eric's funeral, they did Star Wars and cicadas in the background, which just lets you know what type of person he is.
Oh, wow.
And I remember.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Frank Anthematin. I was like, did you pick that? And he was like, yeah, I thought Eric really liked that. And we're like, yeah, it was fucking perfect. It was like so weird and perfect. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, would it be, it's going to be really corny. Like the funeral by Band of Horses. Like I fucking love that song. The buildup just, it's one of those songs where the buildup just fucking delivers every time. It's so good. So they,
I feel like then that's it. Yeah, they tried to help you out.
I know, but it's I feel like that's a too on the nose answer, and I'm like, I'm too much of a hipster to get for that to be my answer.
But maybe that's what makes you a hipster. You know, like at this point, like you hipstered the hipsters.
I guess that's my answer then.
Yeah. I think it's great.
We like it.
Just before we hop off, just remind people where the show is, where they can find you and all of that.
So the name of the show is hashtag Ugly Cry. Grief Hits Different Now. My name is Katie Mack. You can find me at Mackers NYC on TikTok and Instagram. You can learn more about the show there. I've been making content to sort of talk about grief, grieving, and the making of a play. You can find the trailer and ticketing information at uglycryplay.com. My producers are Off the Wall Productions. They also, you can Google them. And the discount code for the show is MAC23 for $10 tickets. And that you can do that throughout the entire run. And the run is October 26th through November 18th at The Chain, which is on 36th Street on the fourth floor.
And if you want to go to the event that I'm moderating with Mac and our friend Gina, that is November 12th, and we will have a separate link in the show notes for that as well. Mac, thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Thank you, Mac.
This is such a great conversation.
Yeah,
and I think this conversation really touched me, and I hope it touches listeners and reminds them it's okay to feel grief, even if you don't have to get over death by any certain time. Like, let yourself feel, right? I mean, what's your parting advice, like for someone who's like struggling in grief and sobriety? Do you have like a little nugget that they can carry with them?
I sort of give this offering that I think you should try to express it. I think you should put it somewhere. I think you should intentionally have a moment with the person that is gone. Make something, talk about them, meditate on them, dance with them, post about them. I think you know, go and intentionally search for past emails and see how it hits you. I really believe in it not being bottled up in a little bit of transference in some way. Making something else with it. And I think that grief never goes away. And the missing of the person never, ever goes away. But there are moments where it gets better. And I think the attempt of doing something with it makes it feel better just for a moment. And sometimes that's it. And, you know, like this is my attempt of doing the thing. And then like, if I die, you'll have all this content of me talking about death, which is great. So hopefully this episode will make it in the replay after my death. The RIP.
Does this
episode.
Mean I have to do?
RIP Matt.
I have to do a one woman show about your death. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I do make the argument that I'm doing an Iron Man for Eric in April 2024, and one of the reasons why I'm doing it is because I told him I would before he died, and I make the argument you should just be careful what you tell people what you're gonna do before before you die because you might just actually have to do it. So the answer is yes. You heard it here first. Recovery rocks. Yeah. Tani's doing a one woman show after I get killed on my bicycle. It'll be quick. So thanks for listening to me and my posthumous episode.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us, Mac. Love you dearly.
Thank you, Mac.
Thank you, listeners, for hanging out with us again, and have a good rest of your week.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. You can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.